content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Hello and welcome to Heard Any Good Books Lately? A program from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. I'm George Douglas. This program is brought to you by the Friends of the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, an organization of citizens, volunteers, and patrons all interested in supporting the library and the services that it provides. The Friends group was founded in 1989 and now has more than 300 members across North Carolina. If you'd like to join the Friends group yourself, we'll have information on how to do that later in this program. This program is all about books, with special emphasis on those available from the North Carolina Library for the Blind. The library has more than 86,000 titles in its collection. Books and magazines are available in large print, braille, and talking books as well. The library has more than 11,000 patrons across the state, and if you're not a patron but are interested in becoming one, I'll have more information at the end of this program about that, too. Now, this month we'll take a look at some of the most popular books checked out during the months of July and August 2018 at the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped. The first book we'll talk about today is Hardcore 24, a Stephanie Plum novel by Janet Ivanovich. This is the 24th thriller in this particular series by Ivanovich. Here is the plot. Trouble comes in bunches for Stephanie Plum. First, professional grave robber and semi-professional loon, Simon Diggory, won't let her take him in until she agrees to care for his boa constrictor named Ethel. Well, Stephanie's main qualification for babysitting an extremely large snake is that she owns a stun gun. Now, whether that's for use on the wandering serpent or the petrified neighbors remains to be seen. But events take a dark turn when headless bodies start appearing across town. At first, it's just corpses from a funeral home and the morgue that have had the heads removed. But when a homeless man is murdered and dumped behind a church, Stephanie knows that she's the only one with a prayer of catching this killer. If all that's not enough, Diesel's back in town. The 6-foot-tall, blonde-haired hunk is a man who accepts no limits. That includes locked doors, closed windows, and underwear. Trenton's hottest cop, Joe Morelli, isn't pleased at this unexpected arrival, nor is Ranger, the high-powered security consultant who has his own plans for Stephanie. As usual, Jersey's favorite bounty hunter is stuck in the middle with more questions than answers. What's the deal with Grandma Mazur's latest online paramour? Who is behind the startling epidemic of mutilated corpses? And is the enigmatic Diesel's sudden appearance a coincidence or the cause of these recent deadly events? Read or listen to this book and find out. It's called Hardcore 24, a Stephanie Plum novel by Janet Ivanovich. The next book that was very popular at the Library for the Blind this summer is called Hell Hath No Fury, a John Hawke novel by Charles West. And this was the winner of the 2018 Spur Award for Best Paperback Western, by the way. Here's the plot. In the first of a trailblazing new series, acclaimed Western author Charles G. West introduces the legend of a man called Hawke. To start their new life together, Jamie Pratt and his young bride join a westward wagon train bound for the Rocky Mountains. They get as far as Helena when their unscrupulous wagon master deserts them, leaving them as good as dead in a forsaken or a godforsaken blood-scorched land. The other settlers agree to set stakes where they are, but Jamie and his bride press on toward the Bitterroot Valley, deep into Sioux territory. And a footnote here, they never come out the other side. Jamie's brother, Monroe, enlists the legendary scout John Hawke to find them. A hardened veteran of the range, Hawke is living off the land in a little cabin on the Boulder River when Monroe comes begging for his help. to rescue Jamie and his bride, Hawk and his guns will soon be back in the saddle, riding fast and fierce into deadly odds. For any other man, it's a suicide mission, but for Hawk, delivering justice is what he was born to do. Hell Hath No Fury, a John Hawk novel by Charles West. A relatively new book that was very popular went right to number one during the summer when it was released is called The President Is Missing by Bill Clinton, former President of the United States, and James Patterson. Now, this is a review that I'm going to read for you by Ron Charles, who is the editor of Book World. And it's an interesting review. It's a little tongue-in-cheek a bit, and I'm not personally sure I completely agree with some of his observations, but I'm going to read it for you as he presented it. So here goes. The President Is Missing. Former President Bill Clinton and thriller writer James Patterson have teamed up to write a novel together, which for pure marketing genius would be like Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Katy Perry releasing a duet. Terms of the Clinton-Patterson deal haven't been revealed, but it's no accident that in their acknowledgments, the first person the authors thank is Washington super agent Robert Barnett. Poor Hillary comes in third with thanks for her constant encouragement and reminders to keep it real, which is what a girl who just wanted to be friends wrote in my high school yearbook, the reviewer says. Well, this isn't the first work of fiction by a U.S. president, by the way. Jimmy Carter published an earnest novel about the Revolutionary War called The Hornet's Nest in 2003, and Donald Trump is a master of autoerotic fantasy. But The President Is Missing is nonetheless an extraordinary event, as the publishers gush. It's the first novel informed by insider details that only a president can know. Well, the CIA can relax, though. Surely no black felt-tip pens went dry redacting classified material from this manuscript. The President Is Missing reveals as many secrets about the U.S. government as the Pink Panther reveals about the French government, the reviewer says, and yet it provides plenty of insight on the former president's ego. The novel opens with the Commander-in-Chief, President Duncan, preparing for a House Select Committee. His staff has strongly advised him against testifying. My opponents really hate my guts, Duncan thinks, but here I am, just one honest man, with rugged good looks and a sharp sense of humor. Facing a panel of sniveling political opportunists intent on impeaching him, Duncan knows he sounds like a lawyer caught in a semantic legal debate. Although Congress insists he explains exactly what he's been up to, he can't reveal the details of his secret negotiations with a terrorist who is set on destroying the country. As a fabulous revision of Clinton's own life and impeachment scandal, this is dazzling. One only wishes Representative Henry Hyde could have lived long enough to attend the book party. The transfiguration of William Jefferson Clinton into Jonathan Lincoln Duncan should be studied in psych departments for years. But men lost their fathers early and rose, both men lost their fathers early and rose from hard-scrabbled circumstances to become governors. Both men met their brilliant wives in law school, and both couples have one daughter. But then we come to the curious differences. Rather than shrewdly avoiding military service, President Duncan is a celebrated war hero. Rather than being pleasured in the Oval Office by an intern, Duncan was tortured in Iraq by the Republican Guard. And rather than being the subject of innumerable rumors about extramarital affairs, Duncan was wholly devoted to his late wife and now lives in apparent celibacy. After all, this is at least partially a James Patterson book, and soon we're crashing through his famous two-page chapters. Showtime, by the way, has acquired the rights for a TV adaptation of this book. The whole 500-page novel takes place in just a few days as a terrorist named Suleiman Sindarouk plots to activate a computer virus devised by a beautiful Abkhazian separatist With a hard, agile body and a voracious appetite for exploration in the world of cyber warfare and in the bedroom. Her virus has infected every server, computer, and electronic device in America. In a matter of hours, the country's financial, legal, and medical records will be erased. The transportation and electrical grids will crash. Hungry and Twitterless, without access to porn, fake news, or Joyce Carol Oates' cat photos, America will be plunged into the dark ages. Only one handsome man can stop this, but it's not easy for the President of the United States to slip out of the White House and foil international terrorists, particularly when those congressmen hot on his tail, intent on impeachment. Fortunately, Duncan gets some makeup help from an actress who is one of the 20 most beautiful women on the planet. A little beard stubble, some quick work with an eyebrow pencil, and voila, the leader of the free world is ready to go underground and defend Western civilization. Unfortunately, the title the president is missing depends upon what the meaning of the word is. After all, Duncan narrates most of this story himself. So we always know his whereabouts. And as we zoom through these chapters, it's easy to tell which author is holding the reins. Sometimes the pages spark to DEFCON 1 with spectacular shootouts, car crashes, Viper helicopters, and a pregnant assassin code named Bach, who is known only by her gender and the classical music composer that she favors. I'm guessing that is the handiwork of Patterson. But for much of The President is Missing, Patterson seems to have deferred to the first writer. That's a problem, says the reviewer. When we pick up a thriller this silly, we want underwear models shooting hellfire missiles from hang gliders. Clinton gives us cabinet members questioning each other over Skype. President Duncan spends an awful lot of time consulting with world leaders, reminding us that a safe and stable United States means a safe and stable Israel. He lectures at us about the proper function of government and the responsibilities of NATO. Several segments read like little admonitions for President Trump. Surrounding yourself with sycophants and bootlickers is the shortest route to failure, Duncan says. But unless someone reads those passages on Fox News, the current president is unlikely to encounter that wise advice, and the rest of us already know it. Rather than those insider details we were promised that only a president can know, the novel is full of tepid moralizing. What happened to factual, down-the-middle reporting? Duncan asks in a critique of click-driven journalism. There is no trust anymore, Clinton's avatar laments, breaking the irony meter. The larger problem, though, is how cramped the novel's scope remains. There is no thrum of national panic, no sense of the wide world outside this very literal narrative, and so much of the plot is stuck in a room with nerds trying to crack a computer code. That struggle feels about as exciting as watching your parents trying to remember their Facebook password. Did you spell it with an O? Did you try a capital letter? It's enough to make a reader nostalgic for the dark ages. Now, that review, as I mentioned, was done by Ron Charles, and he is the editor of Book World, and he's also the host of Totally Hip, a video book review program. And as I said, I read this book, and I thought it was really pretty fascinating. I really enjoyed it, and so did a lot of the world, as it ended up being number one for most of the summer. But you can hear some alternative opinions there from the reviewer and make a decision yourself. But a lot of people liked it. It was in the top five of the most popular books in August at the North Carolina Library for the Blind. Again, the book is entitled The President is Missing by Bill Clinton and James Patterson. And you're listening to Heard Any Good Books Lately, a production of the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Thanks so much for joining me today. The next book we're going to take a look at is by the popular author David Baldacci. This is called The End Game. In The End Game, assassins Will Robey and Jessica Reel are forced to become detectives to solve a baffling disappearance in David Baldacci's latest thriller, end game. When the U.S. government wants to quietly eliminate a threat, it relies on Roby and Reel to take out the target. Their boss, known as the Blue Man, takes a rare vacation to visit his hometown in a rural part of Colorado. When he disappears, his superiors call on the Roby and Reel to find out what happened. They both work better hidden and seeing the world behind a sniper scope than confronting potential suspects directly. The citizens of the small town of Grand have issues with strangers asking questions. Both Roby and Reel have stumbled into a vast conspiracy that will probably get them killed, but they persevere for the sake of their boss. It doesn't help that they're having personal issues. Roby has fallen in love with Reel, and he thought his feelings were reciprocated. So why is she giving him the cold shoulder? Baldacci is a gifted storyteller, and while he has used a similar theme of taking his main characters and tossing them into a small town where they are a fish out of water and are forced to confront justice and injustice, it still works. It's called The End Game, and it's one of the newest books by David Baldacci. Now let's take a look at a new book by Stuart Woods called Turbulence. New York attorney, secret agent Stone Barrington's latest story takes him from a Category 5 hurricane to a rogue nuclear device, all without a single frisson of suspense. Wouldn't you know it, Stone's closed on his posh new digs in Key West just in time to welcome Hurricane Irma, which shutters the airport hours ahead of his planned departure. Every domicile on the island is damaged, but Stone's not so much. He loses electricity and cell phone reception, but a gasoline generator supplies power. So the worst effect of the storm is to bring Florida Senator Joseph P. Box, whom Secretary of State Holly Barker, Stone's old friend and lover, has privately accused of unusually forthright sexual harassment, to his home, where Stone manfully shelters him until the storm blows over. Then it's on to man-made disaster. Box arranges bail for jailed arms dealer Selwyn Owaki, whom Stone helped put away last time around in his book called Shoot First earlier in 2018. And when Owaki instantly flees the country, CIA Chief Lance Cabot enlists Stone's help in crashing a private dinner Owaki set up in London with Box in order to prevent a nuclear device in Owaki's possession from falling into even worse hands. Stone's not eager to help, and even less eager when he hears that gunplay may feature in the evening's entertainment. But urged on by his latest enamorata, model Kelly Smith, he agrees to be the agency's inside man for this one night, and then watches events spiral out of control. The upshot sends Kelly and Stone to Stone's house in Paris, and then to Zurich, back to Stone's house in London, which serves as his home base for another abortive shot at Owaki, back to Stone's house in Key West, and then back again to London in pursuit of Owaki. Fans may see a pattern here. Wood's consumerist hero doesn't purchase any new real estate this time out, but he does qualify to fly another new aircraft. Plus, that nuclear device doesn't explode. Nice. And that was a review of Turbulence by Stuart Woods, one of the most popular books at the North Carolina Library for the Blind during the month of August. Well, I'm going to do something a little bit different here. I'm going to take a short break from telling you about the most popular books during the previous month or so at the Library for the Blind and tell you about a new book that is now available as a digital book. It seems like an appropriate thing to do in the view of the author's death just within the last few weeks. Of course, I'm talking about John McCain, and this is a book entitled The Restless Wave, An American Hero Reflects on His Life and What Matters Most by McCain. It was actually released in June of 2018, just a few months ago. This is from Publishers Weekly, by the way. In his moving final memoir, written as he battles terminal brain cancer, Arizona Senator McCain reflects on his career. Topics include his 2008 presidential campaign, key points in the wars of Iraq and Afghanistan, legislative battles around health care and immigration reform, today's fractious political climate, and American values. Known for his leadership on foreign policy issues, McCain shares his views on a range of geopolitical topics, including Vladimir Putin, the clear and present danger, a murderer and a thug, the Arab Spring, and the President Obama's handling of the chemical weapons attack in Syria, which he calls a shockingly bad mistake. Despite flashes of the straight talk, for which McCain has become known, this book meanders into navel-gazing detail and sometimes skirts meaningful examination. McCain lists President Trump's moral and political failings, but hedges, "I don't know what to make of Trump's convictions," he writes, "and it's hard to know what to expect from him." McCain is at his best when arguing that America is exceptional because of its founding conviction that all people deserve equal rights and because of our conduct in the world. The book's most powerful chapter is devoted to rejecting torture. Rather than a response to extraordinary times, this fine memoir reads more like a requiem of a long patriotic life. So I just thought you would like to know that that book is now available at the Library for the Blind. It's called The Restless Wave, An American Hero Reflects on His Life and What Matters Most, by the late John McCain. Now I'm going to return to the most popular books in the last couple of months of the summer here at the Library for the Blind, North Carolina State Library for the Blind. This one is called Fairy Tale by Danielle Steele. Camille Laminet has grown up in the beauty of the Napa Valley. Surrounded by acres of her family's vineyards, her parents, Christoph and Joy, still deeply in love after two decades of marriage, have built a renowned winery and chateau, modeled after Christoph's ancient family estate in his native Bordeaux. Camille has had a perfect childhood, safe in her parents' love. After graduating from Stanford, she returns to help manage Chateau Joy, her lifetime goal. But their fairy tale ends suddenly with her mother's death from cancer. 6 months after losing his wife, the devastated Christoph is easy prey for a mysterious, charming French woman visiting the valley. The Countess de Pantine is the essence of Parisian seductiveness and sophistication. Within weeks, they are a clandestine couple, making love like teenagers, glowing with their secret. Camille, still grieving for her mother, is shocked by the news that her father intends to remarry. Then she begins to see past the alluring looks, designer clothes, and elegant manners of the Countess, while her innocent father is trapped in her web. When tragedy strikes again, Camille is at her stepmother's mercy, and that of the two evil stepbrothers who appear. Camille needs to fight, first for her legacy, and then for her very life. But as she grapples with the plots being carried out against her, the Countess's elderly, kind, clever mother becomes her only ally, and a childhood friend emerges as a prince worthy of any fairy tale. A wonderful, beautifully told tale from America's favorite novelist, Fairy Tale is a captivating example of the truths that will always withstand even the darkest storms, and a reminder that sometimes fairy tales do come true, and good prevails over evil in the end. The book, once again, was called Fairy Tale, and it was by Danielle Steele. As always, James Patterson is on the list of most popular books for the month, and here are a couple of quick ones that were very popular this summer. The first is The 17th Suspect by James Patterson. A series of shootings exposes San Francisco to a methodical yet unpredictable killer, and a reluctant woman decides to put her trust in Sergeant Lindsay Boxer. The confidential informant's tip leads Lindsay to disturbing conclusions, including that something something has gone horribly wrong inside the police department itself. The hunt for the killer lures Lindsay out of her jurisdiction and gets inside Lindsay in dangerous ways. She suffers unsettling medical symptoms, and her friends and confidants in the Women's Murder Club warn Lindsay against taking the crimes too much to heart. With lives at stake, the detective can't help but follow the case into ever more terrifying terrain. A decorated officer, loving wife, devoted mother, and loyal friend, Lindsay's unwavering integrity has never failed her, but now she is confronting a killer who is determined to undermine it all. This is the newest of the Women's Murder Club thrillers. It was an instant number one bestseller. It's called The 17th Suspect by James Patterson. And another one by James Patterson that was very popular is called The People versus Alex Cross. This time, it's Alex Cross on trial. Alex Cross is on the wrong side of the law in this book, serving a suspension from the force while he awaits trial for murder. Cross has been branded as a trigger-happy cop, another bad apple walking the streets with a gun, an accusation that Cross will do anything to refute. To make himself feel useful again, Cross opens a counseling office in the basement of his home. When his former partner, Sampson, shows up needing his help, Cross jumps at the chance, even if it may end up costing him what's left of his career. When a string of young, blonde women go missing, the investigation leads Cross and Sampson to the most depraved, darkest corners of the Internet. Now, struggling to prove his own innocence and uncover the truth lurking online, Cross himself will risk everything to save his most at-risk patient of all, himself. That was The People versus Alec Cross by James Patterson. One more quick one, The Venom of the Mountain Man by William W. Johnstone. When Smoke Jensen sees a gang of outlaws holding up a stagecoach, his gunfighter instincts take over and he storms in with guns blazing. He kills one of the gunmen. The rest scatter like the rats they are. Another notch on the sharpshooter's weathered grip. But the dead man is the brother of the notorious outlaw Gabe Briggs, and Briggs will want revenge. Tired of the savagery of the lawless countryside, Smoke's wife Sally heads back east for a spell, only to find the big city choking in filth, violence, and corruption. Before Sally can head back home, though, she's snatched right off the street. And when Smoke gets word that Sally's been kidnapped, he hops the first train east. But Gabe Briggs and his ruthless band of bad men are along for the ride. Unless Smoke can punch their ticket to hell first, they'll blow this train sky high. That was a Venom of the Mountains by of the Mountain Man by William W. Johnstone. And that is all for this month's edition of Heard Any Good Books Lately? I'm George Douglas. I hope you enjoyed it. If you'd like more information about how to become a patron of the North Carolina Library for the Blind, simply Google or search for the Library for the Blind or call toll-free 888-388-2460. You can also use the same numbers to join the Friends of the North Carolina Library for the Blind. This program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Heard Any Good Books Lately will be available right after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long until next time.